please step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 458. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined by co-host Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. Guess what? We stream this puppy live on KOOP.org. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
I'm watching Cisco.
It is Wednesday, March 28th, 2018. On the show today, we have different stages in their show, A Yankee Tavern by Stephen Dietz. Then, Theater on Bach will be here talking about The Secretary by Kyle John Schmidt. And of course, we are going to have a lively discussion of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago. We're going to talk about it in Austin again and in Georgetown. Stick around. You gotta love that tap dancing.
I know, I love it. I was over here.
You gotta love the tap dancing.
Bobbing my head.
There we go. Well, both you and I were not here last week, Nicole Shiro.
We weren't.
So I'm gonna check in with you.
And pineapples and all sorts of crazy stuff.
Disco balls and pineapples. Well, that bears the question. I think we need some explanation.
Just Dance Live. You can see what that was at justdancelive.com. Basically, the video game by Ubisoft, Just Dance, went into the live entertainment field. So it was basically like sitting in your living room if you were playing the game, and the entire world of Just Dance came into your living room.
Tell us where this is. Where were you?
It's a pilot tour. It did 4 cities. It's currently going to be the final city in Los Angeles this weekend.
And where did you see it, in Los Angeles?
No, I worked on it in Houston.
Texas?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So it did Miami, Chicago, Houston, and Los Angeles. It's awesome. It's got some, the Cirque du Soleil folks were the creative lighting, and the director is Kim Gavin, who is the creative director for the band Take That, and directed the closing ceremony of the Olympics.
You have all the
Queen's Jubilee. Come on, the Queen's Jubilee is pretty cool credits.
Okay. You have all the 411. Okay. Well, so good. So that's what you were doing.
It was wacky and fun and tiring.
Okay, can we finish talking about it, or we want to talk about it a little bit more?
I'm just saying, it was wacky and fun and tiring. I'm tired.
Okay. All right. Well, good. Let's introduce the folks that are here with us. We have Jenny Lavery. Hi, Jenny.
Hey.
We have Kyle John Schmidt. Hello, Kyle.
What's happening?
We have the incomparable, well, all of you are incomparable, but Amber Amber Quick is here.
Hello.
We have Susan Myberg.
Hi.
We have the incomparable, well, all of you are incomparable, Norman Blumensaat.
Hello.
We have Will Douglas.
Hi.
And Bill Karnofsky.
Howdy.
We have a lot of people here.
We do.
We have a lot of people.
They all went by height, by next to the microphones, too, which is kind of funny.
That's true.
in groups of height.
So, another wonderful show by Kim Simpson and the International Folk Bazaar.
Yes.
I couldn't figure out. I was listening to a lot of it, but I never listened to any of it where he was talking, so I don't know what the theme was.
I didn't know. I tuned in afterwards. I got 10 minutes in. No, I tuned in like 10 minutes in where he has already said what is happening.
But
it was good music.
It was good music. I played that piece from Chorus Line, that as Wayne Cilento singing I Can Do That, because we lost one of the original Chorus Line members. Tony Award winning Sammy Williams died at 69.
Young.
Really kind of young. Mm-hmm. But he did not have a solo in the show. He had a killer monologue in the show. But the song, I Can Do That, is his story.
Right.
That Wayne Cilento did. So that's why I played it.
I knew, because I know.
You know things.
Oh, that, of course. I love that
show. Did he play Paul?
He played Paul. Yeah.
So there's a great book called On the Line that give you the whole skinny on whose is real and which story goes to what real person and who got their role and who didn't. And they all had to audition for themselves. It's a very interesting book, if you're curious.
Yeah.
And what's it called again?
It's called On the Line.
On the Line. Well, so he has an interesting career. He could not get hired after Chorus Line, after he left Chorus Line. He left Chorus Line. He went out to L.A. He did a guest shot on Kojak, okay. Oddly enough. Don't ask me why I know that. That's kind of amazing. Well, I know that because it's in the obituary. But he couldn't. He could not get any jobs after that. He came back to Chorus Line, and then he made his career as a florist for the next 30 years or so. 40 years, however long it was.
That's interesting.
So anyway, he will be missed. May rest in peace. There
That's
he goes.
Sad.
We've had a slew of openings this week.
Yeah, some of the reviews have been fun to read.
We're gonna talk about at least four of them right now. So it's Tony season. Is everybody up on what's going on in the Tonys these days? No.
No.
All right.
No.
Well, the first review I'm going to talk about is not a Tony. It could be a Tony contender. It is Encore's. I'm doing them in order. This opened on the 21st and already closed, by the way. It's the Encore's.
It was supposed to close. It wasn't a bad close. Yeah. It was a scheduled close.
I was about to say so much for an Encore.
No. It was a scheduled limited. Yes. Yeah.
So Encore's comes in and they do short rehearsal. They call them concert versions, but they're really they're basically fully staged. And ever since they did Chicago, the Chicago that is playing on Broadway right now is an Encore's Chicago. And since that time, they've stepped up their game in terms of production. So this is actually a huge production with a big red carpeted stairway like they had on Broadway. And Tommy Tune was in the house the night that they did this. And
loves him. Tommy Tune.
Tommy Tune was the choreographer
Speaking
and director in 1989 when it happened. And I saw it in 1989.
And I
don't remember why, but I didn't like it. And after I read the review, I sort of got it.
Have you mentioned the name of this? Did I miss
something? No, I didn't. It's Norman, thank you. Thank you so much. It's Grand Hotel.
Thank you. It's like, what are you talking about?
Because you said to me all you remembered were
the
couches
chairs.
And chairs.
And
I was
not couches and chairs. It's chairs. And actually, they talk about that. It's the same iconic. They use a whole bunch of chairs that they move around a lot. And it's part of the scenic. And I wasn't crazy because they talked about it in this review as well, because they did it here at City Center as well. So Ben Brantley says, he says, this Grand Hotel is one of the most sumptuous pieces of eye candy ever to glitter from the City Center stage. It's not easy to say.
Interesting. I mean, the original cast was pretty banging and awesome too. Yeah.
It's the musical at the Shaw Festival this summer.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of good buzz. Although this review is not super duper great. It's not terrible, but it's not great. He does say he retains some elements of Tommy Tune's original staging, including the use of portable gold wooden chairs reconfigured in different patterns. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't crazy.
No, I didn't say you were crazy. You just said all you could remember were the chairs.
Yeah. No, that's all I remember.
That's all you remember. I was like, no, Jane, no, Michael. You were like, no,
so
just
what?
Chairs.
What this reviewer liked, Ben Brantley liked, he loved the cast. He didn't like much anything else. He says
even the gold chairs.
He might have liked the gold chairs. He liked the lighting by Ken Billington, and he said that the red carpeted staircase is suitable for a Dolly Levi. who was it directed by? Darn it.
I don't remember.
I've got it right here, but it's the director and choreographer by Josh Rhodes. And they say the production isn't grim, and this is a quote from Ben Brantley, but it's oddly uninvolving, and only some of the many cast members emanate the vivid magnetism that is a musical's lifeblood. So, anyway, come and gone. Although I did one of the podcasts I listened to, they went to see it, and they think it's going to move to Broadway.
It was one of those shows. I mean, I remember seeing it was one of those shows when I saw it. It wasn't like I fell in love with the show, but I fell in love with performances and people. And I was like, that was that number. Oh, my gosh, that person. So I've always liked it for that. But I've never been like, oh, that show is everything. Not like a Chorus Line.
Not like a Chorus
or
Line.
Or Rocky Das Musical.
Which I did not see a Chorus Line. I saw a Chorus Line. Lived in New York for 20 years. I saw Chorus Line at the end of its run for the very first time. I'd never seen it before. And it was, let me tell you, a very tired production by then. So, but there you go. Frozen opened.
Yeah.
Well, here's an interesting thing about Frozen. Critic proof. Nothing that the critics say, and they did not say very good things.
It's Disney.
It's Disney.
It's kids want to go, and parents don't want to listen to the kids saying mm-hmm. no.
Yep.
But Sally went. So ball's going.
So Jesse Green said it's a sometime rousing, often dull, alternately dopey and anguished Disney musical.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. So evidently in the first act, and I've seen the movie once. And in the first act, it's very dark. They sort of go away from Disney. It's a very dark, sort of not surrealistic, but it's heavy, and it's not really bright and bubbly. And then the second act, he says, goes full Disney. So they're very different from one another. He calls it but these two elements of Frozen, the somber and the silly, are not blending visually, musically, or emotionally.
So I haven't seen the movie myself ever.
Yep.
Does the movie blend them well? I mean, it wasn't.
The movie isn't dark. It's full Disney to me.
Yeah. I've only seen it
That's
once.
It's interesting.
Too.
I wonder
enough.
Why they made that choice then to go dark and light in the musical.
Well, it's interesting that this reviewer, Jesse Green, says, and he's probably right, Disney is sort of doing this game where they're doing Disney stuff, but they're trying to do real musicals at the same, or real shows at the same time, and it's not, they haven't decided one thing or another.
They've.
So
they're like in the pool, but they're not full breaststroke. It's doggy paddling still.
So speaking of that, I'll read you the last sentence of Jesse Green's review, or the last paragraph of the review, which talks about that. The question for me is whether Disney, with its endless resources and talent at its disposal, wants to make its own magical transformation into adulthood. Does it want to create serious, coherent, modern musicals instead of cartoons that hedge all its bets? If so, it may be time to say, let it go to the formulas and merchandisable reindeer. Mm-hmm. So they did say there's like a zillion different ways that they tried to do ice, technically, and none of them really hit the mark, except for the simplest one, which was a curtain made of that was bedazzled with Swarovski crystals. And they said that was quite beautiful.
They should have just used the ice skating rink scene from Rocky Das musical. Just saying.
All I'm saying is there is a
just
full...
Just saying, Adrian Rocky did it, and it was pretty cool. Along with that full-size regulation boxing
there
ring.
You go.
I mean, they didn't mess around.
All right, and then in the category of Oh My God, I Loved This, everybody, Angels in America opened.
Yes.
This is the one that has Nathan Lane in it, amongst other people. Nathan Lane is playing, among other things, Cohen, Billy... God, I just lost his name.
Roy
Cohn. I was going to say Billy Cohn. It's not right.
Like, no, yeah.
But everybody loved
Love
it.
Letters.
So this is both Perestroika and the other one. So it's two halves. Millennium.
Yeah,
get into that
yes,
microphone there,
Jenny Lavery.
So I will start by reading the first paragraph of Ben Brantley's review because it sort of sums everything up. And it sums up theater, too. So I'm just going to... I love this. Sometimes, just when you need it most, a play courses into your system like a transfusion of new blood. You feel freshly awakened to the infinite possibilities, not only of theater, but also to the teeming world beyond. And when you hit the streets afterward, every one of your senses is singing.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. That's why we do
That is
we
why
do.
We yep. do it.
Yeah, but what is truly amazing is it. It's from the National Theatre of Great Britain.
Correct.
It is not an American production.
It is not.
Yeah.
So.
It is not, but that doesn't, I mean, that doesn't
well,
discount.
Doesn't take away the feeling of theater, Norman.
I think that says something about the American commercial theaters. They could have been revived by someone in New York, you know, but it was a proven commodity from London, you know, and it helps that it has two film stars in it.
Yep. So. Well, I don't, so I'm going to show my ignorance. I don't know who Andrew Garfield is.
Oh, Spider-Man?
Spider-Man.
Never.
Mr. Spider-Man.
I love that we're all like, Spider-Man?
I think...
Never saw Spider-Man. Sorry.
I think Denise Gauche, I'm saying her name wrong, I know, uh-huh. is in that too. And she's mm-hmm. fantastic. She was just in People, Places, and Things and that went to Broadway, actually. And she's phenomenal.
The whole cast is a big... They all have acting... chops that like resumes. You're like, oh.
So it was directed.
No.
It was directed by Marion Elliott, who did War Horse and Curious Incident. And she is, interestingly enough, the only female two-time directing Tony winner.
Yes.
She won for both of those. So that's pretty incredible. We love
is,
that.
Is Jerry Haynes the only other one?
I don't know.
For Beauty Queen of Lanham?
No.
Did she win the Tony Award for that?
We can check. Maybe some of our listeners will text us in and tell us what
they
we
did.
They
do like to do that.
one of the things that he said about Nathan Lane, which I thought was sort of interesting, he called it Nathan Lane, love letter to Nathan Lane on this. It says his finest work, which is sort of interesting. He said he is a fully human monster, which is the scariest kind.
Ooh.
So he brings humanity to Roy Cohn, who's a monster.
Yeah. It's interesting. I like that.
And I just loved the, I'm going to have to go to the movie of it real quick, like the Al Pacino played Roy Cohn and Meryl Streep played Ethel Rosenberg. And Meryl Streep, I think she's going to do something if she works on it.
She might. Never heard of her.
Yeah.
So, she'll try.
Other reviews, the New York Daily News, Joe Dominiewicz. God.
What DiMaggio, I don't know. Throw a D in there.
He called it the most electrifying production you're apt to ever see of the author's masterwork. Adam Feldman of Time Out New York said, Kushner's two-part play is massive, yet every moment is so rich, so rewarding, so engrossing that it flies by in a rush.
Yeah.
So 7.5 hours worth of theater with a dinner break. So the last one we're going to talk about is Lobby Hero, which just opened yesterday, 2 days ago. With Michael Cera and another superhero. Oh, we have another one. Sorry.
Yeah, that one. There was some in there that made me laugh. So don't skip that one over, please.
Yeah. So Lobby Hero is it takes place in the lobby of an apartment complex, and Michael Cera's in it, and another evidently superhero star that I don't know, Chris Evans.
Yeah. Plays some Captain America.
Plays some superhero, right? Yeah. Along with Brian Trey Henry and Belle Powley. It's a four-character play. Happens, and this is a revival of from about 10 years ago. Jenny, you look like you look like you've got some insight.
I don't.
No, you don't. You look like you look like you did. But what's interesting, this is the first show in the newly renovated Helen Hayes, which is the new home for Second Stage Theater, a not-for-profit theater on Broadway. They liked it a lot. Okay. They say much of what they have to say is both achingly funny and so pathetic it verges on tragic. Directed by Tripp Kullman. It sounds like something I would like to see.
I was like, the little snippets and B-roll and excerpts I've seen of it, I've giggled or enjoyed it. And I've been like, oh. Because when I first heard, I was like, I knew the show and I think it's cool. But I was like, Michael Cera, whatever. Yeah. As kind of how I felt with the cast. I was like,
whatever.
He got
good notices, though.
Yeah. I know. And then when I started seeing the clips, I was like, well, shame on me. Because
I feel like the writing and the comedy in the show really fits his acting style and that's, really well.
Yeah, but you know, sometimes it still doesn't translate. He
was also on Broadway a few years ago,
for this
in 2014,
is our youth.
And he got good reviews.
I know, and it's funny because I saw that show in Chicago before it went to Broadway, and I wasn't super crazy about his performance because he was kind of like almost too film-like, but I can picture it working really well in Lobby Hero.
So, yeah, no, there it got me a little piqued and interested too. So
looks like something I'd like to see. So other reviews and Broadway News, Elizabeth Brown. Bradley said, this taut, intense production, expertly directed by Tripp Kullman, is superbly cast. Making his Broadway debut, Chris Evans is a revelation as a corrupt cop. Ta-da! And Adam Feldman, again, Time Out New York, said, Second Stage's Broadway revival uses Sarah's ineffectual persona to deft comic effect, even as it smartly explores weighty questions of spinelessness and courage. Hmm. Which was my sorority name in college. True story. The final review we have to talk about, and then I think we also don't have time to talk about anything else after this. Oh, well, we do have to talk about March for Our Lives a little bit. Rocktopia, which I had not even heard of.
Oh, I have. For so long.
So Rocktopia is a show. It's on tour, making a stop on Broadway.
Yeah.
It is a show that combines rock and roll music and classical music together. And
like Rachmaninoff meets
Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Did not see that
or
coming.
Led Zeppelin. And our friend Dee Snider is going to be in it in a couple of weeks.
He's stepping in next week for like the 5th through the 8th for like 4 days or so. But that announced after the reviews came out.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I have so many questions.
There's a lot.
Yeah, is there a story?
I don't believe so. I believe it's more like a concert. Uh-huh. So I'll read this because this will give you an idea. Commingling rock and classical music has birthed such wildly diverse artifacts as Emerson Lake. Oh, no, this is just talking about rock and roll. So Emerson Lake and Palmer covered Fanfare for the Common Man. But where did they have some of the things in here? Okay. Led Zeppelin's Cashmere and Stairway to Heaven goes into, I don't know, in here somewhere it had where it went to, but they've got, the aria from Handel, I can't pronounce this, La Schia ci piagi is haphazardly superimposed with bits of Tony Vincent emoting Don't Let the Sunshine Go Down on Me. Later, someone singing Quando Mi Vio, in Muzuleta's Waltz from La Boheme, trades lines with the Beatles' Something.
Can I read one good quote?
Please.
Could it be? Yes, that was Anne Frank looming over the stage, followed by images of Eleanor Roosevelt, Mother Teresa, Diana, Princess of Wales, and a Van Gogh self-portrait. All of them visual aids for Queen's We Are the Champions. If anything, Rocktopia will go down as featuring one of the most misguided PowerPoint presentations ever to grace the Broadway stage.
Right.
New York Times.
Yeah, that was Ben Brantley.
No, that was Elizabeth Mincicelli.
Oh, it's Mincicelli, that's right.
Charles Isherwood, no, Charles did Broadway News. He's not there
anymore. Yeah, Charles Isherwood said, if you ever pine to hear Rachmaninoff and Hart in the same suite of music, or Beethoven and Led Zeppelin back to back, this is your chance. Your only chance. The Hollywood Reporter said, the show feels woefully out of place in one of Broadway's largest and most historic theaters. Ethel Merman, who performed there in Gypsy, must be rolling over in her grave. Oh.
And so Dee Snider's coming in next week. Now, Dee does Broadway. That's a great album. He rocks it.
Check that out.
Patti LuPone and Cindy on it. But
so
I don't know.
We've got it. We're running late, so we're going to stop here. But I do want to talk about the March. Which was had some Broadway connection.
It did.
During the performances. And one of those was Jennifer Holliday performed. And then the headlining performance was somebody named...
Who?
I keep forgetting his name.
Me too.
But Ben Platt. And
there was some other dude. He's going to go somewhere sometime.
Yeah. Honestly, I just lost his name.
Lin-Manuel
Miranda.
I thought you were kidding, and
no,
I was playing along with you.
I totally lost his name.
Oh my gosh, I was totally just
going
with
you.
I was like,
oh,
this is a great bit.
Nobody was going to help me here. This is what happens when you get to be a
I was acting, Lisa.
You did a great job. So they did a wonderful mashup of Found, and I forgot the name of the song, and Tonight from
West Side
Hamilton.
Story. Or Tonight.
It's Tonight from Hamilton.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. So it's Hamilton and Dear Evan Hansen mashup, and we're going to hear it right now
as we
go to break. So let me find my little button so that we can turn it on. Here it is. So we're going to take a little break. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Even when the dark comes crashing through, when you need a friend.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
Hello. You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming at KOOP.org. We've been talking to a bunch of people. Now we're going to just turn our attention to different stages. And we are lucky enough to once again have on the show Norman Blumenstein. Hi, Norman.
Hi, Lisa.
Norman. That was hard to say. I said Norman. Norman. We have Will Douglas.
Hello.
And we have Bill Karnofsky. Hi.
Howdy.
So you guys are doing this show called Yankee Tavern.
Yes.
Okay, thank you for being on the show.
Okay.
Yeah, it's about the New York Yankees, isn't it?
No, not at all.
What's it about?
This is a play by Stephen Dietz, who teaches at UT and is a nationally known American playwright. And it's about 9/11 conspiracies. It takes place in a rundown bar and that is run by Will, who plays Adam. The barfly is Bill, who plays Ray, who is filled with conspiracy theories and listens to all the talk radio things that you could conceivably imagine. So
and also contributes to talk radio.
Yes, yes. So that's.
Does the show follow any particular one conspiracy?
Oh, I think we hit practically every conspiracy in American.
Within the context of the show, I have 7 different conspiracy monologues.
Oh, wow. Now, is this a revival of his work, or is this a relatively new piece?
This was premiered in 2006 in one of those new play rolling premiere things. I don't know what possessed him to write it, but
who knows?
Yeah, so that's when it happened originally.
Now, has he been part of this process?
No.
For you?
No. We've contacted him, but he finally got back to me and said he's been out of town and that if he has time, he'll come see it. So.
Well, I hope he does. And you directed it?
Yes.
How big is the cast?
Oh, 4. It's teeny tiny for different stages. 4 people.
Only 4?
Only 4, yes. Not 14.
How's
that departure for you there, Norman?
I have all sorts of tastes. I don't want to see the same thing. I don't want to eat the same thing. Don't want to go to the theater and see the same thing every night. So that's how it happened.
Well, that's a good enough reason. I'm going to take a little sidetrack here for just a little second. Before the show, we asked Susan to give us a number between 2 and 52. What'd you choose, Susan? Yell it out because you're not near a microphone.
36.
Let's see what 36 is. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Sandra Bernhardt, and you're listening to Offstage on the Air on KOOP Hornsby, Austin.
Okay, we don't get her very much.
No, we haven't heard her in a while. No.
And
a
nice,
interview.
Short and sweet and to the point.
That's very Sandra.
It's very Sandra Bernhardt. Well, awesome. Would you call this a comedy or a tragedy or a tragicomedy or a comma-tragedy?
Or a dramedy.
Or a dramedy.
It has lots of comedy in it, mm-hmm. but it really is a drama. Anyways.
It was interesting because Stephen Dietz within the in the playbook says that it has to be played like a thriller, but with ultra sharp comedy. So it's got both elements, and we get a lot of laughs throughout it, and not all of them are my relatives either.
And they're not all laughing at you. Some of them are laughing with you. Is that what you're trying to say?
Mostly laughing with me.
And mostly because of him.
Okay. Well, now you guys are prepared to do a little scene, yes?
Yes, we are.
Really?
Did somebody want to set it up?
Well, I mean, I think the scene is fairly self-explanatory. It's yet another conspiracy theory discussion.
Okay. So this is Will Douglas and Bill Karnofsky doing a scene from different stages production of Yankee Tavern by Stephen Dietz.
They never ask the 3 questions that must always be asked whenever a crime is committed. Who did it? Did they act alone? And cui bono, who benefits?
Well, I think we know who did it, right?
Do we?
The names of those 19 men have been on the list forever.
Yes, amazingly, the custom people put out a list at 11 a.m. that same morning.
They had the passenger manifest.
Wow! You've seen them!
What the hell?
That is so neat, Adam! Because if you've seen those lists, you're the first. No one has ever seen the actual passenger manifest. They've never been released.
Are you saying that the government...
And so how do we account for the fact that at least 5 of the 9/11 supposed hijackers later turned up in the Middle East alive?
Listen to yourself.
Yeah, but hey, if we know that those 5 men were not on those planes, that means that 5 other men were on those planes. And just who the heck were they?
Ray, there is no...
Gee, if only we had the surveillance videos from Logan Airport in Boston, where most of the hijackers boarded. But whoa, watch out! Here come another conspiracy!
Even you, Ray, even you can honestly believe that some faction in our government engineered the entire attack to what? Unleash a military buildup and consolidate the power of...
A one-term floundering president who had lost the popular vote?
That is... I can't, Ray. That is the most fallacious... I mean, it's like saying Lincoln secretly started the Civil War.
I can put you in touch with people who are very persuasive on that point.
Listen to yourself.
You mean Lincoln didn't start the Civil War?
I was just like, well, he did, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, that was fun.
Yeah.
It seems like it kind of, it's, I'm with all the serious undertones that go through this, it seems like a fun play to do.
It is. It's very fun.
Was there something that drove you to choose this play for this season, Norman?
Well, it's been on a list, and believe it or not, I have people who help me pick plays. Uh-huh. And this was brought to me a couple of years ago by a friend, and I kept reading it and rereading it, and so finally, now's the time to do it. So.
You decided to do it. Yeah. Well, awesome. Is there anything about this particular time that made you want to do it, or is it just it seemed to fit into your season?
Well, I mean, okay. So part of it is matching the play to the performance space. We're doing this at Santa Cruz Theater, mm-hmm. and it takes place in this very small rundown bar, and it seemed to me the perfect place, given the fact that Santa Cruz is surrounded by bars and restaurants everywhere you go. So that was part of the reasoning. So.
That's awesome. So so you're at the Santa Cruz Theater. You opened last week.
Yes.
How are things going?
It's going well. It's going well.
Santa Cruz is such a lovely little space, and it's a jewel that not many people know about.
Not a lot of many.
That's our
jingle.
You know
they've been there for 40 years.
I know, and I guess it wasn't until we started to have this crisis of space that. Many theater companies started utilizing it, and it's the first time I went there. I remember, oh my God, how charming is this place? And
well, they primarily used it for Aztlan Dance Company.
Correct.
Yeah, so
it's their home.
But it's also a really easy place to find because when you tell people in Austin, it's right by Planned Parenthood on East 7th. Everybody goes, oh yeah, Planned Parenthood.
Where that is.
So it's right next door there.
So great. So you've opened last week, and how long are you going to play?
We play through April 14th.
April 14th. And where can folks get information?
DifferentStagesTheater.org.
Yep, I know. I'm so happy.
I know you're so glad that we have a real
website. No, I actually like the other one. Because
you like saying backslash.
Yes, I had it all done. Mm-hmm. Well, great. Awesome. Thank you guys for being on the show.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
And if you have time, we'd love you to stick around and join us backstage. And if not, we understand.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Lisa.
Great
Thank
to be
you.
Here. Yeah.
That was Norman Blumenthal, Will Douglas, and Bill Karnofsky. Different Stages production of Yankee Tavern by Stephen Dietz, playing at the Santa Cruz Cultural Center. Ooh, now through the 14th of April. For more information, differentstagestheater.org. And let's just assassin it up since filled with conspiracy theories.
I love me.
Freak a drink.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
We just got finished talking to Norman Blumenthal, Will Douglas, and Bill Karnofsky. We're going to be joined again in just a moment by Jenny Lavery, Kyle John Schmidt, Amber Quick, and Susan Myberg. But before we do all that, and you guys are here back at the mics, and everybody's welcome to join in the conversation, let's talk about what's going on locally, other than these two lovely plays, The Secretary and Yankee Tavern.
What do you got? I got some other stuff that's very different, so it fills everybody's little palette there. Pollyanna Theater Company's Hurry Up and Wait, the theater for the very young, for the peanuts. They're running at the Long Center. That's pollyannatheater.org. Closing, and we've talked about a lot, and I'm so dying to go see it, is Wakey Wakey with Hyde Park Theater.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
I see. Everybody got a little excited here, too. Mm-hmm. And then the cool Performance Park is going on over at the Vortex with all the different
Speaking
crazy
of
stuff.
Performance Park. Okay, so they were on the show last week. Mm-hmm. And it's just an amazing thing. Bonnie Cullum, who runs the Vortex, has said to me a few months ago, being nervous that this is the largest thing she's ever done. And mm-hmm. sure enough, it takes up the entire campus of the Vortex. And I'm so proud of what she's doing. And so here I am driving to the studio today. Yes, the billboard. They have a huge billboard.
Huge.
Yes.
It's that exciting.
I cannot remember another time. Oh, no, it's okay. I cannot remember another time that since my time here in Austin, that I have seen a local theater company take out a billboard.
That was exactly what I was like. When I haven't seen theater on a billboard. That's awesome.
I mean, you see Zach will do it and the Long Center will do it on occasion, but, mm-hmm. you know, theater's our size.
Little kids like us.
Mm-hmm.
But I was pretty impressed.
I thought it was pretty
good. Go,
awesome.
Bonnie Cullen. Has anybody seen it? I know we all are doing
yet,
shows.
Bonnie, I can't wait. Giant jazz hand to you. It's out here on the airport, right?
Yeah. And yes. And pointing so doesn't cool. really work here on the radio. But
no, but I mean, it's right.
It's probably at about 35th. Oh, it's near Maynard. It's at Maynard and Airport.
I can see it in my mind.
Yes.
And then my last pick, so that we fill everybody's palate, is White Rabbit, Red Rabbit, and yes. We have some awesome people this weekend, and that closes. That's.
Yeah, White Rabbit, Red Rabbit is at Ground Floor Theater. Our closing weekend is this weekend. It has been a phenomenally incredible experience to watch all this. Once again, this is a show that that has a different actor each night. The actor does not know, has not seen, not read, knows nothing about the show, and they do it cold on stage. We've had incredible people like Shannon Sedgwick, K.T. Shorb, Zell Miller III, Lee Mark Eddy, Puhay, who was here on the show, Eddie. Mark Puhay. We've had a star from Lima, Peru. What's his name? I forgot his name. We've had Alejandro Piedemonte. Those are doing them in Spanish. Wow. So this weekend is our final weekend. We have Rudy Ramirez tomorrow night, Thursday, Owen Edgerton on Friday, and Karen Jambon on Saturday. We also have Veronica Pomata doing it in Spanish.
I have to be like, if you remember all the names, you are on fire.
Well, and then Rodrigo, can't remember his last name, tomorrow night, 10 o'clock shows in Spanish. So,
but you can get more information at groundfloortheater.org.
That's true. Okay. So there, that's it for the log
rolling.
So
those are my picks, and that covers everyone from the penis to the adults, musicals, love.
Covers
comedy,
everyone.
Cry, joy, series.
Great, let's do Today in Theater History, shall we?
Today in Theater History?
Today in Theater History.
What happened, Lisa?
Many things.
Tell me.
This, oddly enough, this has been a big day for death. A lot of people died today.
Well, that's sad.
So, I know, it's sad, but let's...
Well, they chose the... yesterday was National Theater Day, so at least they waited a day.
Let's go in order. Back in 1939, the Philadelphia Story opened at the Schubert Theater. And listen to
was
this
it
cast.
Really that long ago?
It was. Listen to this cast. I wasn't even alive. Barely. Katharine Hepburn, Van Heflin, Shirley Booth, Joseph Cotten, Robert Edmund Jones.
Who?
Robert Edmund Jones.
I was kidding.
I don't know who
all
the last guy
of them.
Is. Well, Robert Edmund Jones was the designer, directed by Robert Sinclair. It ran for a year, which was a long time for a show back
yeah.
then.
Yeah.
So 1983, Mother Courage and Her Children open. That's a Bertolt Brecht show, starring one Anne Bancroft. And that was at the Martin Beck. It was directed by Jerome Robbins. Other people in the cast, Gene Wilder and Barbara Harris.
Oh, wow. I was just pretty talking amazing. About Jerome Robbins yesterday. That's funny.
There you go. And here's one that I wish I could have found a recording. There is a recording, but I couldn't find it. 1967, it's a musical adaptation of the play, The Man Who Came to Dinner. It's called Sherry. With an exclamation point. It got dismissive reviews. It ran 72 performances. It was recorded in 2004. The librettist brought together some people to record the score. The librettist is James Lipton. The people he got to record the score are Bernadette Peters, Nathan Lane, Tommy Toon, and Mike Myers.
Wow.
In the studio album. Could not find
that's
it anywhere.
That's
yeah. Pretty amazing, right? I wanted to find it, couldn't. I probably didn't try hard enough. in 1971, the show All Over opened by Edward Albee, and it starred John Gilgood, Jessica Tandy, and Colleen Dewhurst.
Oh,
anybody?
Colleen
That's pretty
Dewhurst?
Amazing. No, y'all don't care.
I All love right. saying you, I got excited. You know, I love talking about Colleen Dewhurst.
This is the.
I do. I really do. Colleen.
The anniversary of the death of Eugene Ionesco, who wrote Rhinoceros, The Bald Soprano, The 12 Chairs, and other things. Or not The 12 Chairs, just The Chairs, which we did one of the last shows I produced at Play Theater Group, my first theater here, was several. Ionesco shows. Some people say Ionesco, some people say Ionesco. I wonder what he said. What do you think? You seem like you... Jenny says Ionesco. I think it's Ionesco. Whatever. He says it wrong.
No,
you're probably right. Let's see. This is also the anniversary of the death of Peter Ustinov in 2004. And in 2010, we lost June Havoc. Anybody know who she was?
Oh, you
do know who she was.
Yes, you do. And it's going to...
A hint would be when we talked about how Ethel Merman is rolling over in her grave.
Yes.
Baby June.
Oh. I was like, I could not think of the character. I'm like... Blah, 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 blah.
Uh-huh. Thank you. She is the person that was depicted as Baby June in Gypsy. And then the final death that we'll talk about is Richard Griffith.
You just laughed at a death.
Died 3 years ago. And he played in The History Boys and with Nail and I. And he was also Uncle Vernon in the Harry Potter series. I don't know who that is.
Interesting.
Other birthdays, Ken Howard, 1944, Diane Wiest, 1948, one Reba McEntire.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's Reba's birthday, Reba. And I didn't know if you were going to add her, but I was going to throw her in there if you didn't.
Julia Stiles. All right, so...
I love Julia Stiles.
We're going to take a little break and come back and talk to the secretary.
Yeah.
Because you know what? A secretary is not a toy. No, my boy. We'll be right back.
Let me entertain.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole.
Hello.
Hello. We are here talking to a bunch of people, and we're going to talk to Theater on Block right now. And we have here the artistic director and the director of this piece, Jenny Lavery.
Hey.
Hi, Jenny. She knew who I was talking about. She went up to the microphone as I was talking. We also have Amber Quick.
Hello, hello.
We have Susan Myberg.
Hey.
And someone named Bill Karnofsky. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Someone named Kyle John Schmidt.
I wish.
Sorry.
What's up?
I didn't even look, and I was reading.
But I wish we had a camera on your face when that happened and when this happened. And that was everything.
I saw Bill sitting over there in
that
the back.
That was what we call
lurching.
A moment in studio. Yeah,
that is a... That is called Lisa being Lisa. So this is a original piece, correct? Written by somebody in this room, written by Kyle. So you want to tell folks what the show is?
Yeah.
Get right up on that microphone, please, sir.
Yeah, right up on this. The Secretary is a play about an office and a gun company, and they're coming out with their new product. A lot of things happen with their guns. They may be going off, or people may be shooting other people. So
clearly this is, topical in today.
Yes. Why? How? Could you relate that to me, please?
So Jenny, what did, was it the topicality of it that you chose to do this for Theater on Block? Certainly, the tragedy in Florida hadn't happened by the time you decided it, but it
hadn't. We were in rehearsal when that happened.
Right.
It's the combination between the topicality and the fact that it's six women, it's an all-female cast, and it is so funny. I have not read a play in a long time that has six very distinct female voices, and because of how Kyle wrote it, I felt like it brought a lot of complexity to the gun issue.
Right.
And I felt like that and the fact that it just rides the line so well between pro-gun and anti-gun. It doesn't really take a stance.
Oh, interesting.
It promotes conversation. And I think
that's so... It's like almost a Jedi mind trick without being a Jedi mind trick. Mm-hmm. And I hats off to you for that, because that was something I thought was really cool about this, besides the women.
Amber, hats off to you.
Oh, thank you.
No, she's the only one wearing a hat. Yeah. We're giving you a direction.
I was like, wait, did you see it?
Take your hat off.
I'm wearing a hat. I wear imaginary clothes, they're so beautiful.
Okay.
Embrace it, Lisa.
So what caused you to write this?
Yeah, so right after Sandy Hook happened, I'm from this small town, and there's a gun company in my town, and they sold 3 years of AR-15 magazines in 3.5 weeks in the weeks following, and everyone in my town got overtime and bonuses, because after big national tragedies, gun sales and gun supplies sales go up. And I started thinking about how, and I love this company, they gave me a college scholarship, they sent me to yearbook camp. And I got very confused by that, because there's this awful tragedy.
And then kind of also into the mix, my mom is an elementary teacher, but she loves guns. And some years ago, a Yemeni Olympic marksman came into town and taught her and her friend Marge how to shoot in a goat pasture. And ever
okay,
since...
Okay, now you think you just need to stop right there with that sentence.
Like... Mic drop. but it's been a fascinating evolution of her because she's an elementary art teacher and she's got this like very like soft, like, then she's also got this like, you know, kind of nutty side where she, I don't know, loves guns and is really into guns as a sport and also for personal protection. So
yeah, well, that's interesting. And just not to sidetrack into real life, but gun sales are down now that Trump is in office, which is interesting.
Well, the interesting thing about it is
nobody's
that
rushing off.
If you look at the kind of the statistics of it, is that they spiked last year, but they're still above the 2016 or the 2015. So they're rising. It's just that there was a blip a year ago, right before the election, where everyone bought all the guns, and now it's down from that number.
Right.
Which is fascinating, I think.
But what was interesting is the fact that you said that after these tragedies, which are ubiquitous in the past 15 years
it's
since Sandy Hook.
Always been like that. For 40 years. It's weird.
They just they spike because people think that we're going to take away. And we, so far, everybody still has their guns. So, Amber, what role do you play in this?
I play Lori Burnham.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, she's the new hire to the gun company. She's the new secretary. It's her first secretarial position that she's very proud of, but she comes from common stock. She's a farm worker.
She has
animals that she takes care of. She does not interact with society that often. So she's sort of the fish out of water, but very determined to excel at her job and protect the office.
Kyle, was I the model for that when you wrote that role?
Yes.
I thought so.
I thought of you in the past.
In rehearsal, Jenny
animals.
Just constantly said, what would Lisa do?
WWLD.
Yes.
And Susan, who do you play?
I play Janelle, who is the office manager at the gun manufacturer. And for everything Lori is, Janelle is the exact opposite. She's been at this company for a very long time. She also takes her job very seriously and believes that she knows everything and knows the right way that everything should run. Despite her type A tendencies and her need to control everything, it all comes from a really good place. And she just wants everybody to be happy and safe and well taken care of, except Lori.
you're just a giver. Why don't people understand
Lori.
You?
Uh-huh.
And there you go.
I liked the deliverance of except.
Yes. Well, you guys are prepared to do a scene, are you not?
Yes.
Oh, that's kind of fun.
Do we want to set that up at all?
Yes. So the secretary, the gun itself that has just hit the markets. The secretary is, has it been released yet by this point, right? It has just been released.
The gun has.
Yes. Okay. And Lori, upon seeing the secretary lying on Ruby's desk, is just becomes infatuated immediately and asks if she can have it. And because Ruby said in the meeting that every secretary should have the secretary. So
the name of the gun is the secretary.
Yeah, yes. We should say that all the guns at this company are named. So they have names like the mall walker, the babysitter, and they're all named after the stories
Most
of women.
Most gun owners name their guns, so it's not very far off.
Yeah, and they're all named after stories of women who have used a gun to save a life more often than not their own.
Oh, okay.
So in this scene, April, Janelle's half-sister, has come into the office.
She has an appointment with Ruby. April, my sister, Janelle's sister, has an appointment on the schedule with Ruby, and she's in there in the office to meet Ruby, but Ruby's nowhere to be found. But Janelle's sort of keeping her there as long as possible because she hasn't seen her sister in a while, and she wants to catch up with her.
Yeah, and then Lori's coming in to get Janelle back on track.
All right, so wonderful. This is Amber Quick and Susan Myberg doing a scene from Theodore and Block's production of The Secretary by Kyle John Schmidt.
Janelle.
How many times do I have to tell you, do not point your gun at me?
I wasn't pointing it at
you. I saw you pointing that gun when you walked in.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Ask April. You saw her just now when she walked in pointing her gun?
I didn't see anything.
April!
And there you go.
But she's always pointing her gun at me. When I turn my back, or bend over, when I'm in the kitchenette, if I make popcorn.
Ruby called. Said you're supposed to be down at the plant.
I'm getting there.
She said you were supposed to be there 20 minutes ago.
I had a visit from my sister.
Half-sister. And she's not on the calendar.
You were on the calendar, April. I swear, I put you in there. It's Lori. She gets on my computer, hacks my passwords, and changes the calendar behind my back.
Do I look like I know how to do that?
Stop pointing your gun at me.
If you don't quit accusing me of things I didn't do, so help me, I will file a complaint.
I have never accused her of anything.
Last week, she told Ruby that I used curse words to describe the fax machine.
I heard you.
I like the fax machine.
I heard
I'm
her.
I'm good at the fax
machine.
She
said it.
Why would I use curse words to describe the fax machine?
And then she smacked it.
It was beeping too loud.
Oh, my God. No, I want to hear more. Do more. What? Fun. Oh my God.
I'm obviously biased, but it's a fun one.
Really is that the pace that we can expect for the whole show?
Yes.
Pretty Love much. It. Yeah.
Love it. Well, and clearly we're dealing with serious issues, but this was a lot of fun that we heard. Is it fun all the way through?
It is fun all the way through. And I have to say the cast is just amazing.
Yeah, tell everybody else who else is in the cast.
Babs George is the owner of the gun company.
Yeah, she's not very good. Go on.
that just makes me happy, too. I know. Yeah.
Not very good. Go on.
Elise Jacobs, who is in Curious Incident.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's the biggest stinker of them all in the bunch. They're just...
And Reagan Goines.
Awesome.
That's a jazz hand.
Yeah.
It's a big one.
It sounds like a lot of fun. And you are at the Long Center, as we like to say.
Where
in
is
New
that,
York.
Lisa?
The Long Center.
I love it. We want to have coffee there?
I walked my dog there the other day in the yard. I don't know what yard wasn't good, so I quit. So you're at the Long Center.
We are at the Long Center.
At the Rollins stage, which is a lovely black box stage.
It's a lovely stage.
And,
it is.
Yeah, it is. And you played again, just like Yankee Tavern. Y'all opened last week. And how's it been going?
It's been really wonderful. Theater on Block's mission is to try to pick shows that elicit conversations about some of these hard topics. And we had great audiences the first weekend. And a majority of the audience every night decided to stay for the optional talkbacks, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really fruitful, compassionate, wonderful conversations.
So are you doing talkbacks every night?
Every single night.
Is David Mamet going to be there?
We'll see.
No. He doesn't
we're
believe in talkbacks.
We're waiting for the response to his invitation.
That's great. So what have you... So in the...
He's been in the closet the whole time, watching, sneaking. He's just like peeking out the crack, watching the whole show.
Well, the reference there is he refuses to do...
Right. Yeah. And all female casts are not really his jam.
Yeah.
No,
that's why I was joking he's hiding. And
So have you... Has anything surprised you yet during the talkbacks? And Kyle, have you been at all of these?
I have been at all the talkbacks. It's been very fascinating, just because I feel like when we're in the talkbacks, people are trying... Because it's one of those things that I think guns cuts in a very, or people's opinions about guns cuts in a very strange way, because people can be very socially liberal and liberal about a lot of things, but they can love guns and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, like it's guns aren't a very good litmus test for someone's political beliefs. So in a lot of ways, I feel like in the talkbacks, people are testing out their beliefs. They're trying to figure out what our beliefs are, and they're trying to make sure that what they're saying is okay. But I think what the play does, and what all of these performances and Jenny's directing has done, is it's made all of these, it's given everyone a voice. I like to say that this play is for people who don't like guns, people who like guns, people who don't know what they feel about guns, and people who like Steel Magnolias but wish they had more guns.
All right, and yes. We'll leave it at that.
That is so, the greatest tagline.
how long do y'all play? When do you close?
Two more weekends.
Two more
close April 8th.
Okay, and where do folks go to get more information?
thelongcenter.org/thesecretary or theateronblock.org.
Great. Well, thank you guys so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Hopefully some of you could stick around and join us backstage. Great. That was Jenny Lavery, Kyle John Schmidt, Amber Quick, and Susan Myberg of Theater and Block's production, co-producing with the Long Center, of The Secretary by Kyle John Schmidt. It's playing through the 8th of April at the Long Center on the Rollins stage. For more information, theateronblock.org. And this song is going to be apropos, I think.
Pull the trigger and you'll know what.
Okay, we did it again. Another hour gone, boy.
We did. That was exciting.
And you and me together. We haven't been together, just you and I, for a while.
I know.
So remember, and we'll miss Nick Mayo, and you're not here with us next week.
I'm not.
You're gallivanting in...
I'll be riding the horses from Game of Thrones in the Icelandic plains where they film Game of Thrones.
Great. Wonderful. So, I can't wait to hear it. Austin Monitor News is next. If you're listening on the podcast, we'll be going backstage. So join us next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. We'll be back next week.
Bye.
The world's a bitter place to be.
The curtain has just come down on Tablet, the musical.
Yeah.
The story of a weary young drug manufacturer trying to cure ink disease. I just made that up. This is why I don't do improv, folks. Anyway, the curtain has come down. We've gone outside the backstage door. We're sitting out here by the dumpsters, our feet magically in unnamed liquid. Although for today, we can pretty well assure it's rain that we're standing in. And joining us backstage, we have Bill Karnofsky. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
We have Amber Quick.
Hello.
We have Jenny Lavery.
Hey.
We have Kyle John Schmidt.
What up?
And we have Susan Myberg.
Hi.
Yay, everybody's here. So so what's up, you guys? It's raining here in Austin, first of all.
Right.
Okay, that's it. That's all I wanted to say about that.
Goodbye, pollen. How many a day? Crazy loud alerts have you gotten on your phones?
Oh,
it's
goodness.
Like, and I'm like, it's flooding. You just told me a minute ago. Oh, wait, no worries. Tell me again.
None. Apparently my phone doesn't care about me.
Really?
But also at like 4 a.m., like I'm sleeping.
4 a.m.
You know I'm
yes.
sleeping. And you know I can hear
well,
it.
They didn't want you to wash away.
Yeah, I guess so. Thanks, yeah. guys.
It is pretty amazing that it's just raining and we get these alerts. God forbid something really happened.
I have to say, driving in today, I was prepared and gave myself plenty of time to deal with the insanity of people on the road in the rain. And everyone was playing very nice.
Not me. I have road rage.
Because they all know to turn around. Don't drown.
That's right.
So, Susan Myberg, I'm going to start with you because we chatted before the show. You and I just came from the same city, sort of.
Yeah, Chicago.
Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hell of a town.
It is. I love it. I miss it, but I also don't miss it. I was very ready to leave.
Did you grow up in Chicago?
No, I grew up in Cape Town, South Africa.
Shut the front door.
Right around the corner.
Okay, I'll be right back. I'm going to go shut it real quick. Yeah, and then I moved here when I was like 10. We moved around a little bit, and then I moved to Chicago after I graduated college and lived there for 10 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Were you in the city or the burbs?
The city.
The city.
Mm-hmm. Both Nicole and I are ex-Chicagoans. Who else here spent some time in Chicago?
Northwestern University.
Northwestern University. And Kyle?
Yeah, I lived there for a little bit.
Where'd you live?
In Andersonville.
Andersonville. You don't look lesbian.
I had
Lisa.
Sorry.
Andersonville's swanky though.
It is swanky. Yeah. It's gotten quite swanky. It was an enclave of lesbians when I lived
great
there.
Bakeries.
Mm-hmm.
And great bakeries.
The, you know, the
a lot of Subarus.
And Bill, did you live up in Evanston?
I did.
Okay. Did you ever live in like the real city?
In
the real city.
No, actually,
I'm not a snob.
That was the first big city I'd ever been to in
Evanston?
My life.
Yeah. Oh, well, the Chicagoland area.
Entirely.
Well, Evanston actually.
I mean, right there where the campus is, you still feel like you're in Chicago mm-hmm. when you get off
the Evanston and Oak Park would be the two suburbs in Chicago I'd be willing to live in.
Yeah.
And those of you that are watching on the thing, I did west for, I see, because I know where they are. Right?
Yeah.
Like
this.
It was like looking at a map.
It was.
Evanston.
It was.
I felt like so, I was
that's
there.
Okay.
So did you do theater in Chicago?
Yeah, I did. I actually, we ran a small theater company, storefront theater company while we were there. And I did worked with a lot of other different companies.
Uh-huh.
And then we moved to Austin because my husband's up going to UT now for his MFA in playwriting.
Where was your theater?
We were itinerant, so we rented from other places, primarily the side project, which was up north in Rogers Park, if you're familiar with
I am familiar with Rogers Park.
Yep, yeah, and kind of all over.
Awesome. Kyle, did you do theater when you were there as well?
I did. I did a lot. Actually, when I was living there, I was like everybody's intern, so a while ago, so...
Awesome. And did you back to you, Susan? Mm-hmm. Did you do theater prior to Chicago?
Yeah, I got my my BA in theater down at Florida State.
At Florida State. Mm-hmm. So you were in Florida. So you go from from South Africa to Florida
to Atlanta.
Hotlanta.
To Hotlanta. Uh-huh. To Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
You know that's where Jesus.
Did you work
is
in
from.
A steel mm-hmm. mill?
My dad actually worked for Bethlehem Steel. He was one of the people who were like on the crew to try to revitalize Bethlehem Steel. It didn't work.
No, Donald Trump's going to bring it back.
Yep, he's going to bring everything back. Good for him. and then we moved down to Jacksonville, Florida, where my family now lives, and I went to Florida State, and then up to Chicago.
Up to Chicago. And why did you choose Chicago over New York?
I
wanted to shovel more snow.
I wanted to be miserable. No, I don't know. I think New York's amazing. My in-laws actually live in New York City, and I just liked the accessibility and the community that existed in Chicago. And I think that's also why I've found myself being so happy here in Austin, because there's a lot of that here too. Right. And I prefer that over the like cutthroat.
Yes.
It's just, I don't know. I do theater because it's fun, and I like to tell stories and like to make art and. I just felt like I had a better chance of doing that in a way that was healthy and still a means that I could be successful and make somewhat of a living at it in Chicago than over New York. And I don't sing.
Well, you need to. You need to be a triple threat. Although Chicago is the theater community there is so insular, and it's hard to break in as an outsider to break into that group is mm-hmm. tough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's why so many people there. I think I don't know what the statistic is now because they've gone through kind of a phase where a lot of companies are closing, but I think there was like 200 theater companies mm-hmm. there, and I think that's why a lot of people sort of start their own companies. It happens a lot. People from a college will move there, start a theater company, and then
two big ones.
That's what happens here, just like Austin. Yeah,
like, yeah.
Two really American big theater. Losses for Chicago mm-hmm. in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah,
have some old standards. So Kyle, have you always a playwright, or have you been a performer? Give us the skinny.
He does intern.
I'm like the world's best intern. Like, I'm really good at getting things off high shelves. no, seriously, they needed to create an interview question after me. Like, would you say that you're better or worse at getting things off high shelves than Chekhov? And it would always be better.
Chekhov was only 5 feet one.
Exactly.
So
I would be able to outlift things off high shelves, which is very important when you're a literary intern because there's a lot of scripts. Very important. I think I started off as an actor, but I did this program in Connecticut, and on the train ride there, I had like 5 monologues to memorize, and I didn't do any of it. Uh-huh. And I spent the entire trip, it was like a 24-hour train ride, just writing this like one-page playwriting exercise. So that kind of tipped me off that I liked writing much more than performing. So
did you get formal schooling for playwriting, or did you just do it?
Yeah, so I started at this this program that I did in Connecticut, and then after that I was like, well, I'm gonna be a playwright. And then I kind of went back to my undergrad and gave myself a list of things to do that I felt like I needed to do to be a writer. Like, I was like, I need to take Latin, and I need to take all these history courses and
Latin first in my list.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm right there.
Right?
Vini, vini, vici. I got it.
Exactly.
Have you written a whole bunch of plays? What's your body of work approximately?
I have written a bunch of plays. And in Austin, most of the stuff that I've done, my group of I guess, friends that I normally do stuff with, we do Frontera every year. So mm-hmm. we're, like, for the past 10 years, we've been Frontera addicts.
Well, I do have to say that I saw you at the, there was a the little one-page play thing that they did over at Hyde Park. And you, I love the stuff that I saw that you did. Yeah. So it was really, really quite fun. So obviously Secretary is your favorite. do you have a second favorite?
Play?
Yeah, that you've written.
Oh, my gosh. No, I guess it's whatever I'm working on at the moment or
it's
whatever I've just finished working on.
It's a choice of you, Lisa. Pick your child. Yeah, exactly. Better.
Well, this is, I never said I was nice.
You know, no, I just finished a play that we did at Frontera called The River of Haircuts, and that was lots of fun. It was about a river that gives haircuts, as the title would suggest.
Which should be,
it's where I get
which
my
should
hair
actually
done.
Exist.
I don't know what you're talking about. Totally. It does. It's where I get my dude.
And where did you grow up?
What I grew up in Montezuma, Iowa.
well, there's nothing halfway about that.
Yeah, seriously. It is what it is.
You grew up in Montezuma.
How
where in Iowa
get
is
the name Montezuma?
Well, it's so tricky. Here's the weird thing is that my dad's name, so I grew up in Montezuma, Iowa. My dad's name is Juan Pierre. So people automatically assume, I guess on paper, that I was Latino.
Latino French.
Yeah, Latino French.
Pierre and
But we're not. So it was like one of those super really confusing things growing up because it made sense in my town. But once we left, it was a weird thing.
And what part of Iowa is it in?
It's like very central. It's like
very
in the
central.
Middle, yeah.
The Quad Cities area?
No,
and
it's
that?
Between Des Moines and Iowa City.
Okay.
Interesting.
Right. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Amber, what's new with you? We already know most everything.
Oh, yeah, you know.
Tell us something we don't know about
you.
I
bet you she can tell us something new.
Point that microphone at your mouth, please.
Okay, fine. What's new with me? I've been...
playing piano, typing.
Nope.
Hitting.
Writing?
Oh, nope. Massaging a small rabbit.
Yes. Yeah. I'm opening up a side business. small rabbit massage.
Well,
yeah.
You should open it up to all small rodents.
Yeah.
I have plenty in my house.
But bunny fur just feels so good.
It's true.
Yeah. I feel like I've just been living
Wait, what
in
the hell
this,
is this
world. Oh, that was my thinking fingers.
Oh.
I really thought.
I was like,
we were playing charades of some sort.
Trying,
okay. I'm like,
okay,
we're
so here's a question for you. This is a question I like, and I'll ask both of you too, because y'all have been here. We know all your past stories and why mm-hmm. you got into theater. But what's your passion outside of theater? What drives
passion.
You that's not theater?
I really love music and singing. Like I love musical theater and all of the ways that you can still tell stories in that way, but
you
I guess
love
that's
Reba,
kind of been.
You were talking
I mean,
about
we
Reba.
Do have a shared love for Reba, but yeah, I think that's probably where my energy has been going mostly when I'm not working on a script. You know, working on a play. I'm trying to
have you fronted or do
together.
You front a band?
I have. I do not because it. Falls to poo-poo like the way bands do always every time
what
every
are some
time.
Of the band names
yeah give
oh,
us some
god.
Band names poo-poo was one of them
right oh my god I'm blanking on all of them the
thinking fingers
there was one there was one iteration where we called ourselves Sass and the Couchmen
like that
that was fun one. There was another iteration they wanted to call us Hamfist for a while, and I was like, no. and then there was, oh man, we had an Alabama name for a minute. Yeah, it's always like, oh, I've got a gig, great. Let's see who can play with me. Okay, what are we gonna call ourselves? And then we drive ourselves insane for.
Can you come up with something?
Well, 3 days. I play rock band. You can come join my band.
Hey, ayo,
ride on over because you know what I.
So what musical do you want to do? What's that musical role that you would love to do?
You know, right now I've been revisiting the Spitfire Grill.
Okay.
Ooh.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, the record, with love, I don't feel like the recording does justice for what that show could actually be. I would love to see get given like a once treatment where it's actor musicians and where everyone, because the story is so beautiful and I love the role of Percy so much, and it's kind of the same idea of like small rural town that's been slowly dwindling and crumbling since Vietnam. And then there's this fresh blood that comes in that at first is an outsider, but that actually does an amazing job of reuniting the town and kind of
breathing life. I
confess
I've never seen Spitfire Grill, but now
it's a really lovely show. It's a really lovely show, but the recording, you know, the recording is very musical theater, you know, which I don't think is necessarily
the musical theater.
Hate it.
Isn't it awful?
Over it.
Torment.
Well, that's cool.
But no, it's just a very folky Americana musical, and so I'd love to see it really done. And I love Percy. I just love that character. I love that role. Awesome. Love that show.
Well, so a lot of nodding going on in here.
We'll see about, we'll see, got that produced for you. So if we had some artistic directors of some theater companies here, perhaps we could get that done.
I think, yeah, you know people.
Bill, what about you? Bill's looking towards the heaven and shaking his head right now. So trying to figure out what that means.
I was trying to figure out who Percy was.
Oh.
Percy Faith.
The lead, yes. Oh. No, Percy is the lead in Spitfire Girl.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. It's a character name.
Yeah.
Like it was also my sorority name.
I like
in
that he was looking up though, like he was in his filing cabinet in his head, like Percy. 19. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, what would you be doing if you weren't theaterizing?
In life or vocationally? I don't know.
Not vocationally, life. We don't care about vocations
here. I'm kind of getting ready for the next lifetime. That's going to spur some conversation, I think. But mostly, yeah.
Anything you want to admit to us on the radio?
Not particularly, no, particularly. But I will, just for the sake of being so interesting. But I do. I am a firm believer in reincarnation, and it's interesting to me because you kind of take. Over the period of a lifetime, you know, there's no such thing as a life that does not have one single regret or one unfulfilled item that you really want to do. And so I'm kind of playing the back. Oh God,
the back nine. Yeah. It's like we're doing a golfing metaphor.
Yeah, okay, I'm doing the back.
Okay, we can do that.
Doing the back nine.
It's the second quarter.
Kind of getting ready for the next tee off. So I just know what I want. I'm you know, very specifically know exactly what I want to do next lifetime.
Okay. That's
do
you amazing.
I'm assuming you don't want to share that with us.
No. I'm.
What do you want to do?
I don't lie about anything.
Not saying you do.
I want to be an actor again.
Okay.
Yeah, but this time I'm going to remember to also be an athlete.
Ah.
Yeah, because I feel that
golfer.
No, I get the analogy. Though.
Yeah, I'm there,
and I love the consistency. No, I do love what I got to do now, and I had a 20-year gap where I didn't do it, and it was kind of one of those things where, gee whiz, what was I thinking, you know? Gee, well, I forgot to do that.
And then the time, and then, and unfortunately, in this current universe, our time only goes in one direction.
Exactly.
And that blows.
Yeah.
And Jenny, I'm not going to ask you about your other passion because you made a really terrible face when I throw that up.
It just makes me nervous. I hate questions like, "What is your favorite
color?"
Yeah, that's so terrible.
I was going to ask you about passion, but I was going to ask you what your favorite musical was. I'm teasing.
The level of anxiety in my body right now is incredible. But I will say that for about 8 years, I went into education full time
we talked about that not too long ago.
Yeah, working with mainly kids on the spectrum and kids with behavioral defiance disorder and emotional disturbance. And
so you know my children.
Quite possibly.
It's amazing and vastly important work, and we're glad you do it. But here's what I want to ask you.
What do you want to know?
Well, I want to ask you, so Theater and Block has been around 10 years now, just over?
It's 2018, math, 7 years.
I know. What you guys have consistently done really good work, and that's not easy to do. Even
minus
for
that one crap piece. I'm just totally kidding.
And we all know what she's talking about.
So
that one.
So
oh my.
No, but how proud are you? How proud are you of the work that you've done?
That's really hard for me. I'm really quite terrible with compliments, and
so I can't win here, no matter what I do. You're
damn Lisa.
No, Chef. I'm trying. I'm really proud. The things that are in front of me are the things that I focus on, though. It's really lovely, the response that we've gotten. The secretary just got, in one of the reviews,
They said that it was the finest work that Theater on Block has done to date.
Awesome.
That's awesome. I saw that and I was like, I did a little hats off with my imaginary invisible hat I like to wear.
Yeah,
That's cool. That's good. And kudos. Yeah, pat yourself on the back.
It's great.
I will prompt you to say two things.
What?
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Can I jump in?
Please.
Just to the compliment train for Jenny. So that just cover your ears. Okay. Just cover your ears. I will say that this is my first show, and several of us, this is our first show with Theater on Block, and getting to work with a company that is so mission-driven and detailed and specific, and the ability that Jenny has to bring us all together and give us this huge task and make it so accessible that it's really one of the greatest mm-hmm. experiences I've ever had on stage and off stage and in the rehearsal room. And I know that the success of Theater on Block and its continued success is very, very much due to Jenny's commitment to it and her ability to be completely unaware of how incredible and amazing and talented and beautiful she is at all times. So she's got a small army that just gets bigger and bigger by the day.
Excellent. Well, that's awesome. That's a great place to leave this, and we will leave. And if you listen very, very carefully, you can hear the Spitfire Grill playing in the background. Can you hear it?
It's pretty awesome.
It's awesome. It was great. If you listen very carefully, it might even be a solo from Percy, but I can't guarantee anything at this point. But thank you guys for joining us backstage.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Is what you see.